the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does. Thank you for being with us. Thank you, Chad Erickson. Good to have you all along for the ride on this Wednesday. Sammy Arnell with the day off. Oh, I got some friends who are going to hang out with me, though. Ryan Ballingy, Golf News Next, does a great job on all things golf. Tiger Woods had a press conference on Tuesday. We'll ask Ryan Ballingy to opine on what Tiger said, what it means going forward. Also, get into it on the Live Golf stuff as well, with talk of Tony Finau possibly defecting from the PGA Tour and heading over to Live. Dennis Bernstein will drop by from the fourthperiod.com, SiriusXM NHL Radio. Get some thoughts with him around the league. A huge injury for the Dallas Stars, which could certainly impact the Western Conference. We'll get into it with him on that. The Winnipeg Jets struggling. Who would have thunk it? They've lost four in a row. We'll get into that as well. And we'll have a conversation with our friend Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. Get into it with him on the top NBA stories. We haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks, so there's a lot to get into there. And I will finish the show in odds and ends, and it's kind of a full circle thing. Because if you see where we start the show and where we end the show, it all comes together nicely. So if there's ever a day to watch from start to finish, it's today. But we start things out in the college football playoff, and of course, a lot of news there as it relates to, and look, we all knew what the big decision was going to be. We had our friend Bill Bender on the show, does a great job with the sporting news on college football. And what did we talk about? Alabama or Miami? That was going to be the big question. How much respect and credit was going to be given to the SEC with a three-loss Alabama team? And we found out, yet again, you cannot make everybody happy. And here's the problem with putting a bunch of people in a room with no cameras. Boy, you want to talk about a great Netflix documentary, and we're going to be talking about Netflix in a second. How about for a Netflix documentary, we don't have to have it same, you know, in that same moment. But when this whole thing is done, how about we put cameras in that college football playoff selection room? How about we put cameras in there so we can see what the deliberations are? So we can see where the debates are? So we can see where the disagreements are? You want to talk about a great Netflix documentary? Because once we're all done and the teams are set and they're all getting ready to play, then I would like to actually see what the deliberation was. How three loss or a two loss Miami team, you know, which loses it to Syracuse and is upset in that game, and you know, the Orange come from behind versus three loss Alabama playing in the SEC. Obviously a tougher schedule, a tougher conference. I would love to see how those debates go down. So you see on the screen where we are as far as the college football playoff is concerned. There could still be some movement there, depending on what happens with Clemson and SMU. Miami could still find their way in, but we'll have to wait and see. And I will keep saying this. Notre Dame does not want to see Alabama. And the way the bracket sets up right now, Notre Dame's going to get Alabama. And look, Notre Dame's been the better team this year, despite the fact that some people will say, and fairly so, that their schedule isn't nearly as good. They had the loss early in the season, and they've been really good since then. I don't. If I am Notre Dame, I do not want to see Alabama in that first round game, even if it is in South Bend. I do not want to see that game. So we'll see how the bracket shakes down. We'll continue to keep it, keep covering it, and Bill Bender will join us on Monday as he does each and every week on this show. All right, from the college football playoff. To Aaron Rodgers, who appeared on the Pat McAfee show, as he does each and every Tuesday during the NFL season, I'm sure for a healthy fee. Here, I watched yesterday. I rarely watch Pat McAfee show, and the reason is simple: it is the softest landing spot for any interviewee ever. They don't ask tough questions. They're not going to ask anything that ruffles feathers. Everybody's the greatest. If you're on his show, they're always going to be super nice to you. You're not going to get anything that really pushes the boundaries in terms of interviewing. We already know this about Pat McAfee. There are high school students that could probably do better interviews than Pat McAfee. But that's what they want the show to be. They want it to just be soft landing spots for athletes, coaches, media people, whatever. It's fine. That said, I was watching Aaron Rodgers yesterday as this season continues to devolve for the New York Jets. And Aaron Rodgers is a large part of the reason why. He stunk. And nobody will question him in this interview that he does with Pat McAfee about why he stunk. Why are you missing guys that are wide open in the end zone? Why is every throw just seem to be a little bit off? And the timing a little bit off? And some of that is, you know, Devontae Adams coming in midseason, and there are other things besides Aaron Rodgers, but to deny that Aaron Rodgers is a big part of the problem is crazy. They'll never address that. It's all about, well, maybe you're going to retire, you're going to go into the broadcast booth, all of these different things. But Aaron Rodgers yesterday, and on the Pat McAfee show, they introduced this Netflix documentary, which is coming out, I don't know, a couple weeks from now, December 17th on Netflix. You have Aaron Rodgers, this documentary, Enigma. And here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers that I think cracks me up. For a guy that claims not to care what people think, for a guy that claims that it doesn't matter what people say or write about him, he ignores it, he doesn't read it, denies it, whatever. I've never seen a guy try harder to rewrite his narrative on a week-in, week-out basis than the guy that claims he doesn't care what anybody thinks. This Netflix documentary seals it. It absolutely seals it for me. Because if you don't care, you're not giving that kind of access. I mean, this thing clearly had access. But it's clearly done with the idea in mind of trying to rehab his image. And why? All he says he's going to do is disappear when his playing career is over. He said it yesterday. They were like, oh, AJ Hawk was like, you're going to go into broadcasting, going to get into the booth. He's like, hell no, you're never going to see me again. Well, then why do a documentary that is strictly built around the idea of rehabbing your image if you don't care about said image? It's because you're phony. You're fake. You go where it's comfortable to be interviewed, and you're going to get softballs lobbed at you. And clearly this documentary is being done with the idea in mind of trying to rehab his image for a guy that says he doesn't care about his image. We're coming back. All right, let's do some NBA as we always do on Wednesdays here on Sports Wrap, bringing our friend Kurt Heelen of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. I got to be honest. And I keep it a buck, as my friend Vlad would say. I keep it a buck with the audience. The last, like, 2 weeks since we last talked, I almost feel like the NBA has been a blur in the background with everything else that's going on in sports, in the NFL and college football. We were just talking about the playoff rankings and all of that stuff. It just feels like the NBA has sort of been in the background, even with the fact that we have the NBA Cup going on, and now we're, you know, we have like our quarterfinal matchups set up and things like that. It just feels like the NBA's been a bit in the background here over the last couple of weeks, Kurt. Maybe not for you because you cover it for a living, but.
No, and not for me, but that's the challenge the NBA has faced. It's why the NBA Cup exists in this window. Why they chose this window was partially, there's multiple reasons, but partially it was this. It was, how do we generate a little more buzz for this dead part of the season, so to speak, where there's just, like, it does get overwhelmed. You are getting to crunch time in the NFL, unless you're the Bengals. You're getting to crunch time, you know, the college football playoff and all this energy and bowl games coming and all this stuff. And the NBA just felt lost, and we'll see. It generated interest last year, but it was a novelty, and the Lakers were in the finals, right?
That's true.
Is that going to be the case this year? You know, I mean, Steph Curry and the Warriors are in, like, at least in the, you know, the knockout stage. There's some name teams, Luka and stuff. But is it going to generate the same buzz or not? And a whole bunch of people just paid a whole bunch of money to bet that it was. So I don't think it's going anywhere, but you could see tweaks.
Yeah. You mentioned the Lakers, so I'll start there. I wasn't going to start there, but it's perfect. We'll keep it all sort of in sync here. LeBron wanted to play 82 games. Now he stunk up the joint recently. Had one of his worst shooting performances, if not his one of his worst shooting performances of his career. Give me a sense as to what the thinking is inside the Lakers organization right now about rest versus this idea of him playing 82 games, the greater good for this organization and where they are.
The problem is, you know what, Jason, we've reached that kind of magical point in the season where Laker fans figure out that their team is mediocre. And it's kind of it's always kind of a fun moment where they go, hey, maybe we're not that good. They're really stuck because LeBron has been slumping, and it's not just this last game. He's missed his last 19 three-point attempts. He has had some of the lowest scoring output he has had since his rookie season. It is just, call it Father Time, call it whatever you want. I'm hesitant to bet against him, but he is in a funk right now. And the problem the Lakers run into is they are heavily reliant on him and Anthony Davis being all NBA level players. They are a top heavy roster. They need those guys to be elite to drive this. And when they're not, they're really not very good. And you're seeing that with their like two and five. I think they're 2-5 in their last seven right now. You're seeing this kind of slump and they'll snap out of it a little bit, but this is who they are is the problem. And look, I've said this to you before and I will say it again. It ain't Darvin Ham. It ain't JJ Redick. It ain't Frank Vogel before that. This roster is what it is. You are only going to be able to take this roster so far as currently constructed. And this is what you get.
Then is it Rob Pelinka? If it's none of those, is it Rob Pelinka?
The problem they run into, yes, it is. But the problem is, and they moved away from what had worked in the bubble. And I don't know that it would have been could they have replicated it? I don't know. But why you moved away from three just shooters and defenders and around LeBron has been the model for eternity. And up, we're going to get another playmaker in. And it just, for all that, they're stuck now because LeBron is who he is, but he's also the driving force of their business. And this is the model until LeBron steps away. And they can't even really start a rebuild because they have traded away so many picks going forward to build around him that there's not a traditional tear it down. They did this before. They tore it down and they rebuilt with Kobe as kind of come see the final years of Kobe show while they were drafting Ball and Ingram and Hart and on down the line, something that they eventually traded for Davis, but they built up a young core. They're not in a position to do that right now outside of like Dalton Connect falling to them.
Just when you thought the Phoenix Suns were, you know, starting to get healthy, and we watched them in that game against the Lakers last week where, you know, they basically run away in the second half. I bet the Lakers at halftime of that game wasn't the greatest decision of my life. True story. Kevin Durant sprains his ankle, and you just go, oh, no, not again.
Yeah. And they're they struggle without him. They're 1-8 without him, and 9-1 with him, and 1-8 without him, or whatever whatever the numbers are now. But like, they are just not the same team without him. And it puts a lot on Devin Booker. Bradley Beal is past what his contract is paying him, if we're going to be polite. He is not that guy anymore. And it just puts a lot on Devin Booker, who's amazing, but you're asking a lot of that team. And again, that is a roster built with three stars that's top heavy. And it needs everything to kind of go perfectly for that to work. And when Durant was playing, he's playing at an MVP level, so it worked. But when he's not there, oof.
My God, against the Lakers, Yusuf Nurkic looked like Wilt Chamberlain in the middle. The Lakers had no answer for him. I'm like, can we do something with Yusuf Nurkic in this game?
I think you vastly underestimate Nurkic's game. Now, you know, look, he's a solid NBA big, but the Lakers' defense is their biggest problem, and specifically their transition defense. You can run all over them, but they're not. I mean, they need to go get a more traditional center to put next to Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis both doesn't want to play it, and he can do it for a stretch, but he's not going to They need somebody who can bang bodies with a Yusuf Nurkic. And there might, in the West, hypothetically, be other really good big centers in places like Denver that you might want to match up with.
I only got about 40 seconds left in this segment, so I need you to be brief on this. Where the hell did the Houston Rockets come from?
That is what athleticism and youth look like when well coached. Ime Udoka has got them playing great defense, hustling all over the place, and they can roll out. They can roll out great guys, and that talk about great drafting. Alperen Sengun as mini Jokic, and plus getting Amen Thompson and Tari Eason and on down the line. It is a well constructed roster.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned at the top of that answer though, Ime Udoka.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's going to be paying a healthy fine to the league for his fine comments yesterday. Can't tell the refs they need effing glasses. But that said, he's got to be up there for Coach of the Year right now.
He has done a great job so far, 15-7 for the Houston Rockets. We'll have more with Kurt on the other side. I got another Western Conference question to get to as well. Don't go anywhere. All right, another segment of NBA Talk with our friend Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com, who's been so gracious as to lend us his time and perspective, years of wisdom. there it is. I was waiting to see which one would get you to laugh. There it is.
Wisdom is funny. Yeah.
How long have you been covering the NBA, Kurt?
Full-time since 2010, and I had a Laker blog that was with ESPN and mildly successful, depending on how you want to
find
that.
Wait a second. You worked for ESPN?
They co-signed my blog as part of, remember, the True Hoop Network?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I was one of the handful of guys getting paid because I was established in a Laker and doing the Lakers. So.
There you go. We have that in common. We've collected paychecks from the mouse. There we go.
I paid for some pizza with it. I didn't really, wasn't paying the mortgage with that one, but.
You know what I mean? You weren't getting that Stephen A. Smith money? You weren't getting 20, just, 20 mil a year?
Just a few zeros short of that.
all right. Give me some thoughts on, this Zion Williamson stuff, just the hamstring again, no timetable for return. That organization's been hit by injuries. Alfred Payton comes back, has 21 assists in a game, and then gets released. Like, what is going on with New Orleans? And take it to the Zion Williamson stuff, because it almost feels like he's the poster boy for everything that's wrong with that organization.
It is a little bit, but I will tell you that this is where things stand right now. They're bad. They're going to be bad. They are going to pull the ripcord on this season early because they're in the West, right? They're not going to be able. This isn't the East where Philadelphia could suddenly get hot and climb back into this thing. They're in the West. They're not going to make the play-in. They're going to go into the lottery.
So will Ingram get dealt?
They're going to try to, but I will tell you this. There are agents of players coming into this draft, at the top of this draft, were like, how do I get my guy not to New Orleans?
Wow.
it is that kind of problem. It is unfortunate. Look, it's been bad luck with injuries. Zion is, they paid him knowing the risks, and here we are. And part of that is got to be on him for how he takes care of himself, but part of that is on the organization for taking the risk. They've also just been unlucky with, you know, DeJounte Murray's broken hand. They are going to try to trade, I'll say everybody. I don't think there's anybody safe on that roster. They can't, there's no market for Zion, but, not no market, but way below what they would do. But they're going to try to trade Ingram. They are going to try to trade a whole bunch of people at the deadline and start retooling this thing, but it's going to be just hard to do. And Zion's got 3 fully guaranteed seasons after this one on a max contract. You are still building around him and hoping for his return because you don't have another choice. You are locked in to Zion.
It's almost like a Deshaun Watson bad kind of deal.
It is, I mean, that, and you can't, this is the NBA. You can't even, what are you going to do? There might be some outs, but not good ones.
Wow. It is startling to think. And I mean, they're near the bottom of the league in attendance. Yeah. I mean, it is It is it is as bad as it gets. Everything. It's as bad as it gets right now for them.
You have to be really good in that market at basketball to draw interest, because if you've been there, you know it's Saints, maybe LSU if they're good, yeah. Saints. And then, like, if Zion – but there was a real buzz. There was a real excitement around this, and that's just – they've wasted that goodwill. That is gone now.
Let me get a couple in on the East before we let you go. Give me some thoughts on Cleveland here. They've won 7 of 10. They obviously have finally lost a game. Still atop that Eastern Conference alongside Boston.
They are legit. They are legit contenders. They are the biggest threat to Boston. Wow. Maybe the only big threat to
Boston. What about the Knicks? What about my Knicks?
Yeah, I love your Knicks. They're entertaining.
They are. They're score. I've never seen Knicks teams score this much.
You know what's funny is, I'm going to borrow a line from Steve Jones at the Dunker Spot. They're this year's Pacers. They are the best offense in the league, and the 25th defense or 23rd defense or whatever they are all
offensive. It's going to drive Tibbs nuts.
Yeah, it is. And so that is a recipe for being entertaining. It is a recipe for making the postseason and maybe even winning around if things break their way. But you're not really a threat if you can't get stops. And right now they just – Mitchell Robinson can have – like, there's things that might ultimately help, but they're not – I don't see how they become good enough defensively to cause a problem. But they are an entertaining team. They're a very good team. Cleveland – one of the best defenses in the league. Evan Mobley stepping up as an offensive creator changes who they are. They are just very good right now on that end, or good enough on that end. And we even haven't seen the best of Donovan Mitchell. He hasn't been as good as he can be. I think he is making sure Darius Garland and everyone else gets their shine. And that is, like I said, that's the one team with the depth, especially once they get Max Strus back at some point and add three-point shooting. They've been without Dean Wade. They get some role players back who really help them, and they're the one team with the depth and size inside and physicality to challenge Boston, because it's hard to match up with Boston. This is the one team with the size to do it.
Not trying to take a dump on what they're doing. They've only played 4 games against the West. They've been doing all of this largely against the East. I just want to say,
they've got a lot to prove. They've done it for a quarter of the season. I think they're real, but doing it for a quarter of the season is, hey man, we're 8 miles into the marathon. Yeah. Man. There's a lot of running left.
Yeah, there is. Are you surprised Orlando's been able to do as well as they have without Ben Caro, undefeated at home too?
Yeah, I don't know how Jamal Mosley's not getting more shine for Coach of the Year, by the way, because of what he's done.
Because he coaches in Orlando. That's why.
There's that. they've got the mouse on the jersey. Yeah. Franz Wagner stepping up into that offensive playmaker role with Paolo Banchero out has been just epic for them. And he's still more of a finisher than a true creator. But he has filled that gap of points. They have been able to move the ball on offense. Jalen Suggs and team. A really well-coached team that is, you can, hey, Laker fans, just a thought, and Knicks fans, you can be good every year if your defense is really good, right? Like, it just keeps you in games, keeps you around, and you can get enough offense to win. That's what Orlando is proving. That's what Houston is proving. That's what all these other teams are proving night in and night out.
You talk about teams pulling the ripcord. You mentioned the Pelicans. How far away are we from that with the 76ers at 5-14?
The problem is they don't have they don't have their picks. They don't really have good outs. They are stuck doing this. They need to get Embiid back and try to crawl back into this thing and get up to the 7 seed and do what they did last year, which was losing the first round, but at least looked like they could be threatening. I don't know how they're all in on this big three. They don't have a choice.
Always appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
All right, coming up in 10 minutes, Tiger Woods talks. Ryan Ballingy listens, and we talk to Ryan Ballingy about what Tiger Woods said. Also, these Tony Finau to live golf rumors. Let's talk some hockey. Bring in our friend Dennis Bernstein, thefourthperiod.com. There he is. Hangs out with us on the show. Thefourthperiod.com, SiriusXM, NHL Radio, as well as the calendar turns to December. A huge injury. Tyler Seguin out 4 to 6 months for hip surgery. He was off to a great start for the Stars. They're third in the Central. How do you replace what a Seguin gives that team?
In the short term, you don't. I think what Jim Neal is going to do, and Jim Neal is a very aggressive general manager, who's the general manager of the Dallas Stars. By the time we get to the trade deadline in March, then you'll see what the gaps are on this team. Can they replace it? This team has a lot of depth, so it's not a death blow for the Dallas Stars. Now, they may not win the division. As you mentioned, Ty's been doing great. The challenge is that this is a recurring injury, Jason. He's had hip issues for years now. And the way it looks like 4 to 6 months would have him returning to the conference final, which is the Final Four. It's a long time away. So I think Jim Neal's probably certainly got a plan A and plan B. I think in the moment, because they have started 16-8, they are an exceptional defensive team. They're not going to hit the panic button. He's not going to go out and make a trade tomorrow. Now, if you look at who could replace him down the line, now you look at a team like the Islanders, who have struggled, who have, I think, lost 23 games, Jason, in overtime over the last two seasons, which is stunning. They don't look to be a playoff team, so maybe a Brock Nelson or a Kyle Palmieri, who are unrestricted free agents, that might help the offense in Dallas. So certainly no panic, but that is a big blow for the Dallas Stars' championship hopes.
Let's stay out in the West and talk about the Winnipeg Jets, because it felt like every time I had you on, they were still on this amazing hot run. Now they've dropped four in a row, and the Wild lead that Central Division that we were talking about. What's going on with Winnipeg?
Well, they wanted to break them up because they were so good. Now let's break them up because they're really bad. They've lost four straight. They've lost 7 of 10. Look, here's the thing, Jason. There are great teams, and there are teams that are playing great. That team was playing great. Are they a great team? I don't know. Could they win the Stanley Cup? They could. They really could. But now Nikolaj Ehlers, who's a major part of their offense, is on injured reserve. And the offense is dried up a little bit. So when that happens, as great as Connor Hellebuck is, and he is the number one goaltender in the league right now, you got to score some goals to win games, and they just haven't. Now, here's the thing, Jason. You know this. In any sport, baseball, NBA, long season, you're going to hit valleys. This is a pretty deep valley, but again, they're, what, 2 points out of first behind the Minnesota Wild. The Wild have a game in hand. So no panic time in Winnipeg. They could be top three in the division. But again, it was a team playing great, not necessarily a great team. And we'll find that over the next 55-some-odd games, how great the Winnipeg Jets are.
One more on the West. And I say it because we are here in Las Vegas, the home of the Golden Knights, who just continue to sort of motor along here, you know, through the first 25, 26 games of this season. Yeah. Give me some thoughts on what Las Vegas has been able to do leading that Pacific.
Great at home, 10-3 at home. Getting better on the road. They're 6-4-3, so they're still literally under 500. But if you watch the game last night, a 1-0 game against the Edmonton Oilers, Aiden Hill net was great. He's going to be one of the goalies in the Four Nations tournament for Canada. Jack Eichel is playing at an MVP level. Right now, it's either Kaprizov. If I had a vote, and I do have a vote, if I had to vote right now, I'd either vote for Jack Eichel or Kirill Kaprizov from Minnesota for the MVP. And it's a veteran team right now. They still miss Mark Stone, but you know, with Mark Stone, you never know he's going to come back. I assume he'd be back for the playoffs and probably sooner. So again, this is a veteran team who I think Jason has a chip on their shoulders because they went out last year in the first round, and that's not what they're used to. So this is a very good team that could win the division, that could go advance to the cup final again and ultimately win it because they're that good. But it's an older team, Jason. So the one concern I have is like guys like Stone, Ika was hurt last season as well. How healthy will they be going into the postseason?
We're on in Canada now. So I always want to try and throw a bone to our friends in Canada watching us on Games Plus. Hello, Canada. Montreal has been the second worst team in the NHL to this point in the season. They get Patrick Laine back, who haven't played a game in like a year. Talk about what it's going to mean for that franchise and hopefully trying to right the ship at least a little bit if he can be anything close to what they expect him to be.
Yeah, it's a feel-good story, Jason. It's not going to affect the standings much because the team isn't very good. It's as simple as that. There's just not enough quality on that team to make them a threat for the playoffs.
Thank you, Canada. Good night.
No. It's a great story, though. He comes back in his first game. He gets a goal. He gets the first star. It's great. It's just it's not a very good team, Jason. That's the problem is that, you know, they just not – that's why they need Patrick Laine. That's why they signed him. They need goal scoring. And hopefully him and Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki can combine for a trio that gets them more offense. But it's a long climb. I don't think Martin San Luis in any trouble there, even though they are last in the East. But it's a bit of a climb because they just don't have enough quality players to get to the top eight in the East. So if you're a Habs fan, you got to have some patience with your Montreal Canadiens. But that was a nice story last night in Montreal, Patrick Laine's first game back after signing with them, getting injured in training camp, and ultimately scoring his first goal of the season last night.
Let's flip it to the other side then, in Toronto, who's obviously playing very well, battling the Panthers atop that Atlantic division.
It's not about Toronto. Washington's the best team in the East right now, which is, I think, a stunning development. But with respect to Toronto, look, they won what? Austin in first place. They keep winning without Austin Matthews, who finally came back, scored a goal the other night. This team should win the division because I don't think Jason would. You know, Florida Panthers, they played a lot of hockey over the last couple of seasons. They went to the Cup final and lost in five. They won last year. They're not going to put the pedal to the metal with 20 games left. They're going to make sure everybody's healthy and they're playing relatively well. So I think there's a great opportunity. And the rest of the teams in the division, I don't think they have a shot. Boston, they're playing better under Sacco, but I don't think they're a division winner. So I think Toronto could win the division relatively easy because I think it'll be more meaningful for them to win the Atlantic than the Florida Panthers, who really could care less about where they finish in the standings when they defend their title.
Dennis Bernstein, thefourthperiod.com, SiriusXM NHL Radio. Always good to talk to you, my friend. Be well.
Always a pleasure, JP. Thanks for the time.
Keep things moving on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap, odds and ends, to finish things off in 10 minutes. Let's talk some golf, because when Tiger Woods talks, people listen. Our friend Ryan Ballingy stops by the show. There he is. Golf News Net, hanging out with us on the program, to lend us his expertise on all things golf. So Tiger met with the media at his Hero Challenge event in the Bahamas. Ryan, I want you to take a listen to this, and then we'll react on the other side.
I'm still not there. I mean, these are 20 of the best players in the world, and I'm not sharp enough to compete against them at this level. So when I'm ready to compete and play at this level, then I will.
And then you said, I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, that you hope to play once a month going forward. Is that still the goal, or have you had to sort of recalibrate?
Well, I didn't think my back was going to go like it did this year. It was quite painful throughout the end of the year, and hence had another procedure done to it to alleviate the pain I had going down my leg. And so what are my commitments going forward? Is it once a month? Yeah, I could say that all over again, but I truly don't know.
What did you come away with from that and Tiger in general yesterday in the Bahamas?
In a weird way, it kind of felt like a full circle moment of the 10 years that this back thing has been a thing, going back to about 2015 when he had that first news conference at the Hero where he talked about having the microdiscectomies and that everything from here would be gravy. And we had the gravy. We had 2018 and we had 2019 and we had a Masters win and he played in the President's Cup as a playing captain and all that stuff happened. We had the gravy and now we're kind of back to what's left. And I don't think he knows. I mean, he's had, this is his sixth back surgery. And as I had said 10 years ago, back surgeries begat more back surgeries, and here we are. We also didn't know he was going to crash his car at 70 miles per hour and outside of Los Angeles and make things a little bit worse, but that's ultimately part of the deal. So moving forward, I don't know what to expect from him, and I don't know what is right to expect from him, because he will be 49 at the end of this month. He's basically done as a full-time player, and he's been done for a long time as a full-time player. So if we could get a Masters appearance and one other thing in 2025, I think that's a huge win. I think people would be happy just to see him those couple of times.
Did it surprise you he talked about the fact that the fire is still burning? Because there were times last year, particularly late in that season, where it seemed like we might not see him ever again. It felt like he was close to just walking away because of the frustrations and the injuries. And obviously a lot of that stuff is in the moment. And then when you let time sort of pass, and you start to think if you're Tiger Woods again, maybe I've still got one more run in me of playing on, you know, on somewhat of a non-ceremonial level and still being able to maybe to try and figure out a way to win a major or something like that. Did it surprise you that he sort of came across that way?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the nadir for him last year was the U.S. Open at Pinehurst because he felt like he played pretty well, but just could not score to get to the weekend. And you could see the positives. There were plenty of them. Just there were enough negatives to keep him away from making the cut. And I think a sense of mortality, career mortality set in, knowing that he took a special exemption from the USGA to play in the U.S. Open because he had only a five-year exemption left from winning the 2019 Masters that had gone away. So they had to give him a special exemption. You don't get a lifetime exemption for winning the U.S. Open, unlike the other three majors. So I think it kind of started to set in like, hey, if I'm going to do this moving forward, if I'm going to be a guy that plays all four majors and shows up to all these tournaments, one, I've got to be healthy. Two, my game's got to cooperate. And three, at least to play in one of them, I've got to get an invite. And there's a kind of sense of lowering yourself to a degree to accept a special invitation from the one major you can't get the exemption to because you don't get the permanent exemption for it.
Switch gears away from Tiger here for a second and talk to me about Tony Finau, because I've seen these reports and people rumors and all of this that Tony Finau is headed to LIV as they continue to slowly pick off PGA Tour golfers one at a time, you know, as they try to force this deal with the PGA Tour, which seems like it's been in purgatory forever here. Give me what you know about Finau and the possibility of him bolting for LIV.
Well, this is the second year running where these rumors specifically about Tony Finau have run pretty rampant, right? I mean, this time last year, there were reports out there, he's definitely signing, he's definitely moving, and then ultimately didn't for whatever reason at the end. Whether that was a last-minute decision, whether that was the decision all along, it's unclear. So we're back to that again, right? Because Jon Rahm has kind of indicated he would love to have Tony Finau in LIV, playing on his team, the team they concocted for him to join. And on one hand, I can understand it because there's probably not many more years where this LIV money is available. And this may truly be one of the last ones because a lot of the players who originally signed with LIV starting in 2022, their contracts are starting to end. And it has been made very clear that the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia does not plan to throw another several billion dollars down the drain on just giving people signing bonuses. That is long sailed away. So for someone like Tony Finau, this may be his last window to cash in the way that even similar or close to similar to other name players at his level on the PGA Tour might be able to cash in. So I can understand why he would do it. I can understand why he wouldn't. Seems like his wife kind of put that rumor to bed a little bit on TikTok, but she also didn't say that it wasn't going to happen. So she kind of fueled her own drama fears by not indicating one way or the other what her husband intends to do.
I've got 10 seconds. Does it feel like we're any closer to a deal with PGA Tour and LIV?
No, okay. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
Well said. That was even less than 10 seconds. You gave me a little buffer there. Ryan Ballingy always does a great job on all things golf. Always appreciate it. Check him out over at Golf News Net. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
We're coming back. All right. Just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Wednesday. David Artsma, former MLB reliever, our closer on tomorrow's show. Who knows? Maybe we'll have Juan Soto news by then. He is supposedly close to making his decision on who he's going to play with in 2025 and well beyond that. Supposedly starting to go through the process of eliminating teams from contention for his services. So we'll see where that story is. Who knows? By tomorrow, we could have a decision. You never know. Check out the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast. It's available on all your favorite podcasting platforms, Spotify, YouTube Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Amazon, Odyssey. We're on all of them. Go and check that out. Also, the Jason Page the Sports Wrap with Jason Page. Our Sports Wrap Substack is also available. Go and check that out. extended clips from the show, conversations that sometimes run long, and we have to shorten them for television. Go and check that out as well. All right, without any further delay, ladies and gentlemen, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends. I want to kind of bring everything full circle. We were talking at the top of the show about Aaron Rodgers after we got into the college football playoff. And in discussing the Aaron Rodgers stuff, we were talking about it from the perspective of him wanting to be loved so badly, despite saying everything to the contrary. Clearly, every move he's made here over the last couple of years has been about image rehab, right? And he just can't help himself. And look, there's egomaniacs that are like that. So Aaron Rodgers is doing what he can. But when you think about the Aaron Rodgers situation, the Jets put all their eggs in the Aaron Rodgers basket here over the last couple of years. Last year, obviously, not his fault, the Achilles injury, and then what has taken place here in 2024, which has been a disaster for the Jets. And in that context, I think about Stephen A. Smith, who you see on the screen talking, even though you can't hear what's coming out of his mouth. Trust me, he was talking. There's this news, and Andrew Marchand, who does a great job with The Athletic on all things sports media and is a friend of the program. Andrew Marchand is reporting that there's talk of a 6-year, $20 million a year, $120 million total contract that is about to be paid, potentially from ESPN to Stephen A. Smith. He had wanted 25, they offered him 18. I think he makes $12 million a year now, and there's talk that that's going to go up a lot. And there's even some reporting that suggests that Stephen A. Smith will not only get this huge deal from ESPN, but he will also be tied into Disney in a way that will allow him for first looks, which means potentially other types of programming ideas or content that he would be able to do within the Disney family. And all I could think to myself is, in this era of sports where we talk about contracts that are albatrosses, and again, it's been a theme throughout this show, we talked about the New Orleans Pelicans and what they're dealing with right now when it comes to Zion Williamson, that albatross of a contract around their necks, and how much it's going to hamstrung that organization. Deshaun Watson, one of the worst contracts in the history of the NFL that the Cleveland Browns are trying to figure out how to maneuver around. You got the Jaguars dealing with Trevor Lawrence, who's making all this money, has regressed the last 2 years. They owe him money till 2028. We can go on and on and on about different bad contracts in sports. I will predict that if Stephen A. Smith gets this deal, it will be the worst deal in the history of sports media for ESPN. And here's why. They can talk all they want about what he means to that company. And in some regards, when it comes to basketball, I completely get that. Even though he's been exposed in a lot of ways, a lot of times when he talks about the NBA with other NBA players and people who have actually played the game beyond some, you know, remedial college level as he did. But I think about it in the terms of, one of the things about ESPN, what it was always built on, was nobody was bigger than the brand. I remember I worked for ESPN briefly with their ESPN New York brand before it got sold off and radio started to kind of die for the company. I've worked for the ESPN brand. I've worked closely alongside it with one of their affiliates. And one of the things they always preached was about the brand. And this was sort of in the height of ESPN's success, that it was always about the brand. Now you are officially going to have two guys that have essentially surpassed the brand. Pat McAfee being one and Stephen A. Smith being the other. And both have enormous shortcomings. Both of them have enormous shortcomings. There is a blind spot with ESPN when it comes to Stephen A. Smith, that somehow they think when he talks, a lot of people hate watch. And maybe that's what they're counting on, is people to hate watch. I just won't watch at all. But there are a lot of good people that are going to get pushed out of their jobs. There will be more layoffs. There will be more cutbacks as the result of this kind of profligate spending on Stephen A. Smith and what they're paying for the Pat McAfee show. Here's the good news. If you are another media company out there and you're looking for talented people, there will be plenty available because ESPN can't keep them all. And they've put all their eggs into the McAfee, Stephen A. Smith basket. It's going to do it for us. Sam returns tomorrow. David Ardsma on the show. Thank you to Ryan Ballingy, Dennis Bernstein, and Kurt Heelan. I'm Jason Page. We'll catch you back here on Thursday for more Sports Wrap.